I'm Andrew Green, and this is the Thursday edition of Flick Pick, the edition of the podcast where Jacob Holmes and I discuss the new movies coming out any given weekend at the cinema. Jacob, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we're actually recording this on the day that it's posting, Thursday. We've never done that before. So, this is going to go live right after we finish. Not much time for me to edit out my worst, stupidest mistakes.
Oh, you don't have many of those anyway.
All right. Well, looking at the box office here in Benton Harbor this weekend, we have two new films opening up. I think it's kind of obvious which one's more high profile.
Which one's the biggest one? That is The Call of the Wild, a new adaptation of the classic novel by Jack London. From the, I don't remember what year it was written. It was like one of the earliest 20th century novels.
I'll find out right here.
But this stars Harrison Ford. Mm-hmm. As Jack Thornton, I believe is his name. It's been a while. I read the book in like middle school.
Let's see. That'll take me a second to check out.
I'll keep going. So Harrison Ford is the main star of the movie, but mm-hmm. The book is really about a dog,
right?
Who lives pretty much his whole life in this wealthy household. Really, pampered kind of estate pup. Mm-hmm. And he gets stolen by some shady characters and he gets shipped all the way to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And goes through all these hardships, goes through a whole bunch of grueling things, eventually comes into the care of one Jack Thornton, who in this movie is played by Harrison Ford.
It is John Thornton.
John Thornton, okay.
Close enough.
Jack, I was thinking of the author Jack London.
Who, by the way, the book was published in 1903.
Wow. Yep. So yeah, real early 20th century novel there.
Mm-hmm.
So John Thornton.
Yes.
takes the dog in, and they kind of just go out there. John Thornton's just this grizzled adventurer. And they just go on have adventures in the Yukon together.
Yes.
And, all the while, the dog, whose name is Buck, by the way, is constantly experiencing a urge, or is feeling, for lack of a better term, called to join this pack of wolves that keeps following them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of giving into his baser instincts, leaving behind his former life to go back to like the basics of his species is.
It's The Call of the Wild.
Yes, The Call of the Wild. And I mean, spoiler alert for a very, very, I'm not going to do the math. It's like a 117-year-old book now. Buck does leave. At the end of the book, Buck does join the wolf pack.
Okay. Now, I read this book when I was a child, but I don't remember it so well. So what you just told me, I had forgotten.
No, I don't remember a whole lot about it either. Again, yeah, I read it in like eighth grade, I believe. It was middle school.
Right. No, same here. And I see, so we've got, Harrison Ford is the main character. The film also has Karen Gillan.
Yep.
Bradley Whitford is in this. Now, is the dog all CG?
Yes, the dog is completely CGI, as are a lot of animals in this movie. And that's kind of like the big thing about this one. So because the dog is all CG, and I can understand why they would do that. Uh-huh. Because, real animals are hard to work with. They're unpredictable. You can't really communicate with them unless they're really highly trained.
Right.
But all of the animals, especially the dog, are all CG. You see this in the trailers. The dog is very expressive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I feel about it watching it, at least in the trailers. You can tell that the dog is not there.
Right. When I first saw the trailer for this, for the first, maybe minute of the trailer, I just assumed it was a real dog, but at a certain point I looked at it, I think there are some
shots it looks fine, other shots it's really obvious.
Right, right. So, but it's understandable given the amount of things they probably would have,
Oh yeah, it's a high action adventure movie. Again, it'd be hard to do that with a real dog. Now, it's worth noting that this movie is directed by Chris Sanders, who previously created the How to Train Your Dragon franchise for DreamWorks Animation. Also worked with, and this is also a 20th Century Studios movie.
Ah, yes.
This is the first it was Fox, but Disney, after owning Fox, they're rebranding the 20th Century brand, taking the Fox out of it because they wanted to distance itself from the Fox broadcasting.
Okay.
And it's now 20th Century Studios. Chris Sanders also did co-directed Lilo and Stitch for Disney.
Okay.
Back in 2002. And so it's this is a real, an interesting coincidence has occurred here because with a novel as old and as well known as Call of the Wild, there have been many adaptations.
Right.
Both in film, television, what have you. So there was a 1935, I believe, film adaptation with Clark Gable.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the last film produced by 20th Century Pictures before they merged with the Fox Film Corporation to make 20th Century Fox. Coincidentally, this is the first movie being put out with the 20th Century Studios branding.
Okay, so it sort of is coming full circle.
Yeah, it's kind of poetic.
It is. It is. Yeah, there's been many adaptations. I'm looking at a list of them. There's the 1935 one. It was done in 1972 with Charlton Heston.
I believe there were a couple silent or black and white versions, maybe some lost film versions.
Yeah, there was a silent film made in 1923, but it looks like maybe that was lost. There was a Snoopy TV special based off the idea.
Really?
What a Nightmare, Charlie Brown.
Oh, I've heard about that. I've heard about that special. It's kind of insane.
Right. A 1981 anime film was made
based on
1997 adaptation with Rutger Hauer and Richard Dreyfuss, narrated by Richard Dreyfuss.
Wow.
So this has been covered quite a lot. I find this interesting because it takes place in the Yukon, which to me is just an interesting area.
Yeah.
And
I'm curious, they got Harrison Ford to be in this, and Harrison Ford does not just show up for any movie anymore.
Right. That's
you have to really get him on board something.
It's kind of like an event if he's starring in a live-action movie like this. So is there a critical reaction yet?
Yes, there's critical reaction is kind of mixed. And a lot of the criticism is lobbed at the CGI animals.
That's not surprising. Like, you can tell the wolves are CG when you look at the trailer, I think.
you can tell there's a lot of CG. I find it hard to believe that they really, did a lot of extensive location shooting out in the middle of the Yukon.
That's a shame. That's a shame because I love those sorts of locales. But by the way, there's a movie on Disney Plus called
Togo.
Togo. I really want to see that.
Yeah, and a lot of critics are comparing this movie to that. Ironically, they're both Disney ventures.
Have you seen Togo?
I have not watched Togo yet, but it's got Willem Dafoe in it, and that's why. And I really need to watch it because I love me some Willem Dafoe.
I want to see it because a Greenlandic singer of which I am a fan is in it.
Okay. So.
But anyway,
with the criticism lobbed at CGI, they're also praising Harrison Ford's performance.
That's good.
He showed up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing a lot of critics saying that it still feels like an earnest kind of movie that you don't see that much anymore.
Hmm.
So it does, and I would expect this from a director like Chris Sanders. I've been a fan of his work. I love Lilo and Stitch. I love How to Train Your Dragon. I believe this might be his first live action film.
It looks like it. Well, let's find out. I had clicked his name a minute ago. By the way, this film is rated PG, so it's a family film.
Yeah, and again, that's what critics are saying, that it still feels like a family film that doesn't get made a whole lot anymore. Speaking of ratings. The MPAA rated the Mulan remake, which doesn't come out for another month. That got a PG-13.
I saw that today, yeah.
That's the first live-action Disney remake that's gotten that rating, and it's the first first actual Disney film since the last Pirates of the Caribbean movie to get a PG-13.
Huh, I wonder if Disney's going to bust some heads over that. by the way, this is...
they let it happen.
Right.
So...
But this is Chris Sanders' first live-action film.
Okay, that's what I thought.
He previously directed The Croods.
Oh, that's right. I forgot he did that one, too, for DreamWorks.
How to Train Your Dragon and Lilo and Stitch. Or co-directed that one, right?
Yeah, he co-directed that with Dean DeBlois. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Okay.
But he also and that person also co-directed How to Train Your Dragon. Actually took over directing for the How to Train Your Dragon sequels. So
okay.
I don't remember if he was involved with The Croods.
All right. Well, it's Call of the Wild. You know, it looks all right.
I still want to check this movie out.
I kind of do, too, mainly because of the setting. But
and I want to see it just, you know, for Harrison Ford. And I have fond memories reading the book when I was younger.
Right. It could be a refresher for me because I barely remember it. But that's our first new release, the more high-profile of the new releases. The other one is a horror film, correct?
Yeah, another horror movie. We just keep getting these.
They keep releasing horror movies this year. This one is Brahms the Boy 2.
Oh, boy. I've seen a lot more horror movies than I normally do recently.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I've gotten this trailer a lot.
I think I've gotten it once or twice.
I know I got it before Gretel and Hansel. I got it before The Turning. Mm. I feel like I got it before something else. But so this is, you know, as it implies, a sequel to, I don't remember what year the first movie came out, but it was called, it was The Boy.
Okay.
It was about this woman who moves to the UK and becomes takes a nanny job for this family. And she comes to find out that she's actually nannying this creepy doll. And the owners of the house are treating the doll like it's their own child, and she comes to find out that it was that, you know, they did have a child who supposedly died in a fire, and they supposedly keep the doll around just to have, you know, mm-hmm. pretend like their son is still there.
So it's a creepy doll movie.
Yeah, it's a creepy doll movie, and like all sorts of weird things start happening. Like she thinks that are connected to the doll, but the doll like never like the standard haunted house kind of things, mm-hmm. but there is a twist to that at the end of that movie that was kind of crazy. And I remember that movie getting not good, but like better reviews than typical early year horror movies get. And yeah. I think they attributed that to like the cast, the main character and her love interest had really genuine chemistry. So the characters were good. But it, you know, at the end of the day, it is still an early year horror movie jump scare fest.
Right. I don't even remember the first The Boy. It came out in 2016.
Oh, wow. So it's been a while.
I guess it has been, yeah, about 4 years. But I have no memory of this film. Seems like it's something I would have seen. But the new one, you know, it stars Katie Holmes.
Yeah, Katie Holmes is in this.
Right.
I haven't seen her in a while. So, yeah, she, you know, she is the mom of this family, this young family, who moves into the house that was previously occupied by this family with the doll.
So they left the doll.
Well, if I remember correctly, the doll gets destroyed, but like right before the credits roll, it's like shown being put back together. But okay. In the trailer, it's established that the son of, you know, Katie Holmes' son is going through some issues, having some trouble. So they move to this house,
mm-hmm.
and he finds the doll buried in the backyard or in the woods surrounding the house. And the doll's like all messed up now and everything. It was all like pristine in the original movie, but now it's like all messed up and broken.
Well, then who wouldn't want to keep it around?
But he keeps leaving it around with him and, you know, calling him by his name, Brahms. That was the name of the couple's of the original original movie's son. And as you'd expect, creepy things start happening once the doll is brought in. And yeah, that's really all you need to know. This movie, the trailer for this movie has one of the funniest jump scares, like unintentionally hilarious jump scares I've ever seen.
Okay.
And it's when Katie Holmes is like looking all suspiciously at the doll and like just, you know, having a staring contest with this thing. And, you expect, I mean, you know, it's like the there's no music. It's totally silent. So you expect the jump scare is going to happen.
Right.
But like she does the jump scare to the doll. She like goes boo to the doll and complete with the big old jump scare stinger music. And that just made me laugh.
That is funny. It would be funny if the doll jumped, but I'm guessing it doesn't. Or
I don't know what they're going to do with this movie, because in the first movie, you know, they ended up having an explanation for why things were like moving around and stuff when the doll was seemingly not doing anything. In the trailer for the sequel, you definitely see the doll do stuff, like its eyes move. The last jump scare shot of the movie is like it, like the doll's face like demonically opening up and a bunch of like locusts swarm out of it and whatnot. So I don't know what they're gonna do with this movie, but I'm not gonna check it out. I have no interest in this one.
Well, this may be where I'm at this weekend. You know, I gotta say, when it comes to creepy doll movies, though, I mean, nothing could win my heart away from Annabelle. But
not even Chucky, the Child's Play movies. Do those count?
I never really liked the Chucky films, Child's Play. But I was just trying to make a joke about Annabelle.
Oh yeah, I know. Annabelle is definitely the queen of the creepy dolls.
Did I ever tell you about the best moment in Annabelle Comes Home?
You might have, but tell me.
So in the film, there's this babysitter watching over a little girl who lives in the home where the Annabelle doll lives.
It's the Warren's daughter, right?
Yes, it's the Warren's daughter. They've got all these haunted artifacts down in their basement, in this locked up in this room. But the Warrens go away, and they leave a babysitter with their daughter, you know. So, of course, as soon as the parents leave, the young daughter goes into the room where all the haunted artifacts is, leaves the room unlocked, and then, you know, the babysitter puts her to bed. And, you know, we fast forward, I don't know, maybe halfway into the film. Babysitter goes into the little girl's room to check on her as she's sleeping. You know, goes up to the girl's bed. And there, lying in the bed next to the little girl, is the Annabelle doll.
Ooh.
And the babysitter looks at it like, huh.
It's like, huh, how did that get there?
No, the babysitter doesn't know it came from downstairs. So she just looks at it as like, I guess this girl sleeps with this messed up looking doll. And then she just tucks her in and leaves the room. I don't know. That was a fun little moment. Something from Annabelle Comes Home, but this is The Boy 2.
Brahms, The Boy 2. Why don't I just call it The Boy 2?
That would be a much better title.
It's very awkward.
I may see this because, I don't know, there's nothing else as far as I can tell.
Or just Call of the Wild.
Oh, yeah.
Or you could see Knives Out again.
I could, but yeah.
That is still playing here in Benton Harbor, and that comes out on DVD on Tuesday.
Right. Well, you know, so as far as The Boy 2, is there a critical reaction yet?
Nope. As far as I know, there's no Rotten Tomatoes reviews. I don't think it's been screened for critics, so, you know, that's a good sign.
That's hardly a surprise, really. But, well, hang on. Wait a minute.
Oh, is there something?
30% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. Well, that's better than I thought it would be.
It's you know, not 5%.
not Fantasy Islands.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm wrong. I'm looking at the Boy 1.
Oh, okay.
There's no review yet for The Boy 2. I stand corrected.
All right.
So it's a sequel to a movie that got a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Which, again, that's strangely better than most early year horror movies.
It is. It is. You know, I don't know. I guess I'd be okay with seeing a film with Katie Holmes in it.
Yeah, I'm sure she does a good job.
Haven't seen her in a while. All right, so those are the two new films playing this weekend. I think the winner is...
Call of the Wild.
Call of the Wild, yeah. All right, that's the recommended new release. Now, as far as everything else that's playing here at Celebration Cinema in Benton Harbor, 1917 is still playing. That's an enjoyable film.
Yeah, really good movie. Didn't win a whole lot of awards, but it's still very much worth seeing.
Indeed. Bad Boys for Life, still going strong by many accounts. It's a fun movie anyway. Fantasy Island is playing. How did that one do anyway?
I think it was like number 4 or 5. But again, it's a Blumhouse movie, so it doesn't need to, you know, bust down the box office to make a profit.
They made it for $15. it opened at number 3 with $12 million.
Oh, okay, so I was a little off there.
All right. So, yeah, we got the Fantasy Island is still playing. As mentioned, The Boy 2 opens up. Doolittle is still playing, which is weird.
All right.
Okay,
well, sure.
Maybe I'll see that. Birds of Prey still playing. That's doing okay, really.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not as far as like the other DC movies go, it's not doing as well, but it also... A, they made it for a lot less than the other DC movie, than a lot of the other DC movies, so it doesn't need to do you know, Aquaman numbers.
Right.
I was almost going to say Justice League. Whoops. That didn't do very well. No. I mean, okay, it made like $600 million, but it cost like, when you factor in all the costs of to make it, it made like no money.
Right.
Whereas like movies like Aquaman or Wonder Woman were the big money makers for DC there. So it's not doing as well. And I just kind of roll my eyes every time I see an article label this movie as a flop. It really isn't.
Right. It's earned about $60 million so far, Birds of Prey.
Probably here, but when you add in the international numbers, it's probably surpassed what its budget was.
All right,
I think its budget was under 100.
Okay. Well, I could find that out. Give me a second to Google here. Jumanji, The Next Level, is still playing. Amazingly, as you mentioned, Knives Out is still playing in Benton Harbor. Can you believe that?
With a couple of show times, and yeah, it comes out on DVD on Tuesday. That's just, again... We've said it many, many times before on this show, but that's just a testament to how much people really, really love this movie. the word of mouth that that spread once this movie, the movie even had a good start out of the gate, and the more people saw it, kept telling their friends to go see it, and they did, and yeah, it's just word of mouth.
I should really see it this weekend, you know? This has to be the last weekend they're going to have it.
Probably.
Here. It's got two show times.
It's outlasted a lot of movies. It's outlasted movies that came out before it. It's outlasted big tent poles that would have otherwise pushed it out of the theater.
Did it outlast Frozen 2?
It did.
Wow.
Frozen 2 came out the week before.
That's impressive. Yeah, the two show times they've got for it this weekend are not so convenient for me, though. But, well, it's available, you know. I'd say it's the best movie of last year. Anyway, also playing is the film that you saw this weekend, Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
How was it?
It was fine.
It was fine?
I mean, again, for a video game movie, which has a very low bar already, that's not saying a ton. But, you know, I'm glad that it's... Okay, this is weird for me. So, it's both... It's at the same time better than it could have been,
mm-hmm.
but it also could have been so much better. It's in a weird middle ground, you know, and it doesn't just stem from the redesign of Sonic,
right?
Because that would have actually added some like hilarious value to the movie. It would have been like media. It would have been like hilariously bad with that that gross design running through the whole movie. But there are some merits to it. You know, it's the script itself, the story itself is pretty mediocre. I mean, it's basically just the Smurfs movie, but with Sonic.
Right.
There's a few tweaks to that. The actual script is a lot better. You know, Sonic is voiced very well by actor Ben Schwartz. He has a lot of funny things to say. It is kind of endearing without being too annoying. Jim Carrey does a great job as Robotnik.
I was going to ask.
It was definitely a throwback to his earlier crazy manic performances from the 90s and even into the early 2000s.
Is it almost like an Ace Ventura type performance in a way?
I don't know.
Is it more like a Grinch kind of thing?
Between the two, it's definitely more Ace Ventura.
Okay.
But it's more like, it's like if Ace Ventura was the bad guy.
Okay.
James Marsden, fine, doing his best he can with the material. That's really about it for the cast. It is, you know, it is consistently entertaining. There were definitely a lot of times I was, you know, I found it funny. And I enjoyed all the, there is a lot, you can tell there's a lot of love for Sonic put into this movie.
Did they put any sort of Easter eggs in the film?
Oh yes. Like, yes. And there's some obvious ones. The infamous, Sonic fan art drawing makes an appearance in this.
Okay.
It's just like a poorly drawn, this is a poorly drawn picture of Sonic.
Right.
And, you know, there's some side characters that are really funny. So the movie has, you know, it does this Smurfs movie thing where it puts this character who's not from Earth on Earth in the real world interacting with real people. But instead of making it a fish out of water story, they wisely time jumped 10 years from when Sonic ends up on Earth to the events of the main events of the movie.
So he's already used to our world.
Yeah, he's already used to our world. He knows what things are. And so you don't have to deal with, you know, silly fish out of water stuff, which that can be done well.
Paddington did it well.
Paddington did it well. The first Thor movie did it all right. So they were smart about that. But my main problem with this movie and movies like this are why do they have to be like that? Why does Sonic the Hedgehog have to be in the real world interacting with, you know, real life? Because he already has his own world with a whole bunch of, you know, all of the Sonic characters are like, they're like cartoon animals.
Right.
Aside from Robotnik, who's just a cartoon villain. I'm just like, why didn't you just make this animated?
Right. Yeah.
Because the CG animation on Sonic, on the redesign anyway, looked really good. I could see that working in a different. It didn't feel like the world of Sonic to me. And I hate to compare it to the Detective Pikachu movie because they are kind of different, but at the same time, they're very similar as well. you know, it made sense for that movie to be live action because they made it very much not the real world. It was the world of Pokemon, just live action, and the CG on the Pokemon looked really, really good the way they designed them.
Hmm. Okay.
So I just think it was an unnecessary creative decision. The whole movie still very much feels like it was made by a studio committee, but the difference is I feel this shift coming with video game movies, because this movie it was number one at the box office by a long shot.
Right.
And so there's not only going to be a sequel to this, I'm sure, but there are, you know, we've got a Mario movie coming out from the Illumination. That's going to be all animated from the Despicable Me people. I'm curious how that's going to turn out, because with Detective Pikachu and even the Sonic movie, that was very clearly, you know, whatever their faults might have been, it's very clear that they were made by people who love the respective franchises, who had nothing but respect and a lot of love for those, and understood why people enjoyed those. I feel like that's the difference between video game movies coming out now as opposed to Super Mario Brothers movie, where the people making those movies were not like the people playing the games, did not understand why. It was just Hollywood just saw these, you know, video games doing really, really well with people. It's like, here, make a movie out of this, and Nintendo let them do the Super Mario Brothers one. Then others followed.
Have you ever read the story of what it was like on the set of the Super Mario Brothers movie?
Yes, Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo, who played Mario and Luigi respectively, were drunk all the time because they hated it so much.
And it was a nightmare of a set. Like a married couple directed it, I think, or two people directed the film, right?
I don't remember.
I'm going to look that up. But I saw the Super Mario Brothers movie in the theater when it came out. And being a huge, you know, Super Mario fan as a child, I was so excited for it. And I think, as I recall, it was the first bad movie I ever saw in the theater. So I walked out of it baffled. And I was like, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10 years old. I walk out of there just not understanding what just happened.
It's like, what did they do?
I was like saying to my friend, like, why didn't they just do what the game does?
You know? And that's kind of my complaint with the Sonic movie. But I will argue that the people who directed and actually wrote the actual screenplay probably did the best that they could with what they were told to do. I'm very curious how the Mario movie is going to turn out. I'm almost certain that there's going to be a sequel. I mean, the Sonic movie, there is a mid-credits scene, sets up for a sequel. I hope there's a sequel. They say there's going to be a sequel to Detective Pikachu.
Sure.
I'm curious. I'm very curious to see like how video game movies will do going forward, if they are in fact going to be better, because they are now being made by the people, primarily made by the people who played the games growing up and who were fans of the games.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. At least that they've got that going for them now. And it's a video game movie and it's not awful. So that's like an accomplishment.
Yes,
right,
that's
there.
An accomplishment all of its own.
It's a miracle.
And you're always going to have people who defend other like previous video game movies. Like I know the Resident Evil movies have a fan base. I mean, that's why they made what, 7 of them?
There's 6 of them. And by the way, I have all of them on DVD. I saw all of them in the theater, and I would never claim any of them are good. I just kind of,
and they're,
I don't know.
And they're not even, I mean, they're kind of like the games in a way. They're more like the later Resident Evil games.
It's more like they tell a separate story that takes place in the Resident Evil universe.
Okay.
And then characters who are dressed up like characters from the game pop up in the movie randomly.
Leon S. Kennedy cosplay.
Yes, that's essentially what happens. Like a guy shows up in part 5, I think, dressed as Barry, but he doesn't do anything.
Barry's a character from the first game. That's weird.
I think it was Barry in the 5th one.
Oh boy.
Yeah, anyway.
I know there are people who defend the Silent Hill movies, at least the first one.
When those came out, I was very excited for them. I saw the trailer for the first Silent Hill, and I was a big Silent Hill game fan. So I saw the trailer and I got really excited thinking, oh, they finally made a good video game movie. But then I saw it and it was kind of just, it was nonsensical.
Yeah.
It was okay, but I wouldn't say that was great either.
And then, of course, there are the Uwe Boll movies.
Oh, at least those are entertaining to watch.
Are they, though? Are they?
They are a little. I have House of the Dead on DVD.
Oh, my gosh. If you want to go down a rabbit hole, look up Uwe Boll. He directed a whole bunch of awful, just truly awful video game adaptations.
Yep, he did. Alone in the Dark.
Oh, that's an infamous one. Blood Rain.
Postal.
Oh my gosh, Postal. Far Cry. He made a Far Cry movie.
That's right. You know, I've seen almost all of Uwe Boll's movies. There was a time when all of his films were available on YouTube.
Oh my gosh, like for free?
Well, not with permission.
Okay, okay, gotcha.
Somebody
gotcha.
Like illegally uploaded them, and I watched all of Uwe Boll's
movies.
Well,
he made them using German tax loopholes, so.
That's right, you know. When,
again, take if you want to go down a rabbit hole, look this guy up, because it is like a masterclass in incompetence, his movies.
He made, most recently he did a film called Rampage, President Down. That's not a Rampage adaptation.
No, it's not. I think it was like it was probably like a Rampage mockbuster, because they made an actual movie of Rampage, which actually, that movie, the one with Dwayne Johnson, that didn't get terrible reviews. But
no, I don't think I saw it. But
I didn't see it either. But this is a guy who can't take criticism and actually challenged his critics to boxing matches.
That's right. Yeah. Good old Uwe Boll. There was the one about like Assault on Wall Street.
Didn't he make like a Holocaust movie?
Yeah. There's a movie here. And I'm looking at his IMDb. There's a movie called Auschwitz.
Oh, no.
No, not him.
No.
IMDb says controversial director Uwe Boll depicts the harsh reality of the process inside of the most infamous Nazi death camps. By using brutally realistic imagery.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, no.
No.
Oh, goodness.
Well, okay, well, that was a long diatribe on not only the Sonic the Hedgehog movie, but also video game movies in general, and then that descended into Uwe Boll.
Well, I'd like to mention something wholesome at this sure. point to get us back on track. I miss the Sonic the Hedgehog ice cream treats.
I think you can probably still find those in like weird food trucks in like big cities.
The ones that come on a popsicle stick,
you know? Yeah, it's like any other like character ice cream treats. They never look like because they get all melty and stuff from the fluctuation in temperature, so they never look like.
I really want to try one of these. I can't find any of these these types of ice cream treats anymore. Anyway, yeah. So Sonic, would you recommend it?
Yeah, it's harmless.
Yeah, check it out. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
All right. So Sonic Hedgehog is playing. The Call of the Wild opens up, as mentioned. The Gentleman is still playing here in Benton Harbor.
Yeah.
The Photograph is still playing. That's the romantic film.
And that's it.
That's everything. So what was your Valentine's Day date, Sonic the Hedgehog?
We saw it on President's Day because we both have that day off.
Okay. Well, you know, we can talk about the film that I saw, which is not playing in Benton Harbor, but is playing at Michigan City's AMC Theater.
And you can also rent it. You can buy it on DVD. You can rent it digitally as well.
You can. But last Saturday, or was it Sunday? I think
over
it was
the weekend.
Sunday. Yeah, this past weekend. It was Sunday. I saw Parasite at the Michigan City AMC Theater.
The 2020 Best Picture winner.
It won Best Picture at the Academy Awards this year, so I went and I finally checked it out. And it was really good.
What was it like? Do you think it's worth seeing on the big screen, or is it? Do you think anything would be lost for people watching it at home?
I don't think anything would necessarily. Well, you know what? I would recommend seeing it on the big screen
because it does look like a very visually striking movie.
It is. It has some distinctive cinematography to it, where there's a lot of shots where there's something happening in the foreground and something else going on in the background, but the characters in the foreground have no idea what's going on in the background. Right.
And that's made all the more and you know, it's you can take that in a lot more on a big screen.
Yes. And it's consistent with the overall theme of the film, which is deceiving this poor family, deceiving a rich family.
Right.
So, you know, what happens in the film, you are probably already know this, but what happens in the movie is there's a poor family. This is a Korean film. So
all I know is the premise, but I really don't want any spoilers.
I will not spoil it.
Cool.
There's a poor family. You know, they live together in this basement apartment. They're totally broke. One day, one of them gets a job working as a tutor for a rich family, teaching one of the, you know, children in the rich family. And he gets the job by lying about his credentials. And the rich family's a bit loose on checking out credentials. Right. So next thing you know it, the entire poor family is working for the rich family, all under different identities. So the rich family has no idea that the members of the poor family are related and are just lying to them about all their credentials. You know, so like,
and then don't they start using their newfound positions to kind of enjoy the life that they have, that the rich family does?
They do to an extent.
Okay.
And there are, you know, the movie,
again, you can't go too much into it without spoiling.
Yeah, there are some twists that come, and the film does get dark toward the end.
I hear it gets pretty crazy at the end.
It does. It gets violent. But, you know, I'm not going to tell you at all any of what's going on with any of that. But it starts off kind of cutesy and comedic when the poor family is ripping off the rich family, because it's kind of funny. You know,
and it is, you know, this movie does have a lot of social commentary.
It does.
There's about class division.
There's a lot about class struggle in this film. That's ultimately what it comes down to. In fact, one of the best lines in the film came from the father of the poorer family. He says to his son, you know, how am I supposed to find a job when there are 200 applicants for every security guard position that comes up, and each applicant already has a degree in engineering or something
right.
like that. You know, so it's very much about the modern economy and
right.
how a guy like this would be struggling. Yeah, by the way, the father in this film was also in Snowpiercer.
Yeah, well, they were the same director, right. Bong Joon-ho. Snowpiercer. The only movie of his that I've seen is Okja, which was a Netflix movie. And that wasn't in, I think that was kind of like a co-production. It was there were a lot of South Korean actors, but there were also a lot of, you know, Western actors in it too. Same with Snowpiercer. That had Chris Evans in it.
That's right. And yeah, I've been watching Snowpiercer on Netflix, actually, the last couple nights. Good movie. But anyway, Parasite is good, and I'm glad that it won Best Picture. Because, you know, you look at the other nominees, like, I guess the other front runner for the award was 1917.
Right.
And 1917 sure did plenty of impressive things, but, you know, it wasn't necessarily groundbreaking in any way, or
I mean it was definitely an impressive technical achievement.
It was, but it wasn't something like fresh and exciting like, say, Knives Out. Parasite
right.
falls into the same category as Knives Out, where it's just an original story that's really good and creative.
Exactly, yeah.
So I'm glad it won.
I am too. I very much look forward to watching it whenever that may be.
Right. I recommend it. And I look forward to seeing what Bong Joon-ho does next. What other films has he made besides Snowpiercer? Did he do the...
He did Okja, he did Snowpiercer, he did The Host.
That's right, The Host. That's the one I was thinking of. All right, so good for him for winning, and I think
they're going to make HBO... Bong Joon-ho is going to collaborate with HBO to make a limited series based on Parasite.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Yeah, I love where Parasite goes toward the end. It gets exciting. But anyway, that's my, I recommend Parasite, and I approve of the Academy's decision for what it's worth, which is really nothing.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, we've covered the weekend box office. Is there anything else to talk about?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know if this is the longest we've ever gone.
Is it really?
37 minutes.
I think we've hit 40 at some point.
Yes, I think we probably did one of the Oscar episodes.
I didn't expect us to go this long.
Neither did I. Anyway, if you had to recommend anything playing in Celebration Cinema this weekend, what would you recommend?
I would probably say Call of the Wild.
Call of the Wild?
Because, again, Sonic isn't really for everyone. You know, I wasn't super into it, but yeah, I'd say go see Call of the Wild.
I'm going to say, for one last time,
Knives Out.
Go see Knives Out, or do as I do and drive down to Michigan City AMC Theater and see Parasite.
Probably, yeah, or if you live closer to like the Kalamazoo area, they've got AMC theaters up there that are probably showing it.
Is there an AMC in Kalamazoo?
Yep.
Really? I used to live in Kalamazoo.
It's I think it's relatively newer. It's in downtown Kalamazoo.
Oh, did it take over where the...
It used to be an Alamo Draft House.
Yeah, I remember when the Alamo opened. Okay, so it's an AMC now. All right. Okay, well, that's the weekend box office. By the way, Parasite is playing at the AMC in Kalamazoo.
I wonder if it's playing at the AMC in South Bend.
That I just closed my browser.
Nah, that's all right. That's all right.
Point is, lots of AMCs are showing Parasite. All right, well, that's the weekend box office. I'm Andrew Green. I'll be back tomorrow with a flick pick review of Parasite.